This is the Cinema for All podcast.
A celebration of going to the cinema.
With Jack Chell and Abby Standish.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
The comedy episode.
Welcome to the Cinema for All podcast. We're your hosts, Jack Chell.
And Abby Standish.
And we're part of the Cinema for All team. So our podcast is a celebration of UK cinema, cinema going, the great films that you see when you're in a cinematic setting, and the people who put those screening events on for you.
Exactly. And we've been doing deep dives into particular areas of cinema, such as working class cinema, queer cinema. We're going to look at feminist cinema soon.
Yes.
And we've got a comedy episode for you today.
Yeah.
But before you even get into that, definitely check out the minisodes that we've got. Lots of great extras with interviews with directors and stars, including Matthew Holness most recently, who directed Possum, a really scary new horror film.
Very scary.
Yeah, and Deborah Haywood, who wrote and directed Pincushion, which is a great debut of this year that we've seen.
Yeah, so that's the first minisode, so go back and check them all out. There's a whole archive of them now.
Lovely.
Yes. And for this episode, though, yeah, we're talking about comedy. The segment for this episode, we're so excited to be talking to Michaela and Linnea, who are from the Showroom Cinema.
So, great.
So they've been programming their comedy season, which is part of the BFI's wider comedy season that's happening all around the UK. And I can't wait for it. They're brilliant.
Yeah, me too. I think you're all going to really enjoy it because they're absolute film fans, and that comes across in when they're talking and through the brilliant films that they've chosen for the programme. First, though, before we get into that, if you do want to find some community cinema joy, do visit our website, cinemaforall.org.uk, or get in touch with us and find out how you can get your own community cinema started.
We will help you! Abby, what have you been seeing at the pictures lately?
I have seen a couple of well-spoken about films, actually. Widows,
ooh,
which we talked a bit about last time, but now I finally get to see it.
Yep.
Really good. I feel like it could be a TV mini, like, miniseries.
It was
maybe
originally. So
yeah,
in the 80s, it was a Linda LaPlante British
ITV, wasn't it?
Yeah, miniseries, yeah.
You can really see that because there's lots of different plot points that are all very, very interesting. And I think what really comes off really well is the direction.
Mm-hmm.
Steve McQueen is great, but the acting, we were right, Viola Davis totally owns it. I'm not going to say what happens at the end of the film, but she just does something with her face.
Mm.
And you don't see that throughout any of the film.
Yeah.
And it really has such an impact. And you don't really realise until she's doing it there. And then you're like, wow.
She's magical. She can do so much with such little time.
Yeah.
So her first Oscar nomination was for Doubt in 2008. And she was in just one scene. And she was Oscar nominated.
It was like that a 6-minute scene or something.
Yeah.
Well, didn't it hit the record for the sort of shortest scene?
I think
someone's ever been nominated for an Oscar. I'm sure that was right.
So that was her breakthrough. And it's insane to me that she's only really been a big star for 10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
when Meryl Streep won for Doubt that night, she came to the stage and she just mainly talked about Viola Davis and how great she was. She was like, somebody give her a movie.
Yeah, good on Meryl.
And so they did.
Yeah, they listened to that. Yeah. You don't ignore Meryl, do
exactly.
You? Let's think about that. Yeah, it was good. And Colin Farrell was really good in it as well. I'm starting to really enjoy him as an actor.
Do you know who's in it that I love? Daniel Kaluuya.
Yeah, Daniel Kaluuya. Oh,
my
gosh.
I love him.
He is amazing in it. In fact, if we're going to talk about, he's like Doubt. This is his Doubt. I mean, obviously Get Out was incredible. He showcased so much within that.
Mm.
This is something completely new for him character-wise.
Yeah.
And you see him in a whole different light. And I'm a bit terrified just thinking about
it. Wow.
He's great in it.
Because he got his start in Psychoville on BBC, which
is
the League of Gentlemen guys.
Yeah.
He played Tea Leaf. So every
comedy.
Time I see him, I'm like, Tea Leaf.
Tea Leaf.
So good.
Tea Leaf.
Yeah. Oh, that was good. That was really good.
Yeah, really good to see that he is just owning it on all of the big screens. And I also saw Assassination Nation.
Oh, I don't know about that one. What's that?
So this is about a sort of hyper-reality, but set in our age of the town of Salem.
Mm.
And what happens is it's based on these four young women at high school. And basically there's somebody who's a hacker and hacking into people's phones, internet searches, and leaking all this information to the town of Salem so everybody can see it.
Mm.
And it ruins careers and it's ruined relationships and it's happening to everybody and people just kind of lose their minds a little bit and start to revolt against each other, even though nobody knows who's done it. I didn't love it.
I was going to say, I'm not getting a sense from your
voice
that you were into it.
I wasn't a fan, whether it was, I just wasn't in the mood that day. I think there was, so I could tell what it was doing, and it's very, feels very, a very prevalent film for now, very relevant to our digital age,
yeah,
and everything like that. But no, I don't know. I think maybe I've outgrown that sort of film maybe a little bit. Like I used to love Battle Royale when I was younger. And maybe not so much now.
Yeah, I wonder how we'd feel if we rewatched it.
But that doesn't mean it's a bad film. It's just not for me anymore, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I just wasn't feeling it. Maybe it wasn't that night or whatever it might be.
Hey, it happens.
Yeah,
it
just does. What have you been watching?
Well, I've seen Pottum. Mm-hmm. So as we were just talking about in the intro, that's directed by Matthew Holness from Garth Marenghi's Dark Place. This is his feature film debut. It's very British. It's very scary. It's got the opening credits were just absolutely beautiful. They really, really took me. And the rest of the film, it's very slow paced. It's almost a silent movie and everything kind of happens in the last 20 minutes, really. But the performances are incredible. So it's Sean Harris, who's in Mission Impossible. He's in a lot of things, actually. He's the kind of guy that you recognise his face. And then Alan Armstrong, who is in New Tricks on BBC.
Yeah. Comedy.
But they're both incredible in it. The performances are brilliant, and the sort of the tone and the colouring of the film, it's very yellowy. It's very sort of tea stained.
Yeah.
A little bit grubby. But you can see what a film fan Matthew Holness is. You can see all of the British horror and international horror actually influences on that film. So I'd recommend that. So it's not just available at the cinema, that's on BFI player as well. So people can just go and watch that whenever they want to.
You write about the idea of so much of that genre coming from the look of the interior of the house, that tea stain thing, like the original Amityville Horror, the wallpaper. Even this is just the equilibrium, this is just a start where everything's fine. You just look at that wallpaper and be like, things have happened in this house.
Yeah,
we are not here for a very nice journey.
Definitely.
What else have you been watching?
So I went to see Mandy.
Owen,
which is the new Nicolas Cage film. It's also got Andrea Riseborough in it, Northeast Gal.
Cool.
I was so excited to see this, Abby. I was so excited. It had incredible reviews.
Yeah.
Really, really great reviews. You know, Nick Cage back at his best.
Yeah.
And I'm a big Nicolas Cage fan.
Yeah.
I'm not just a fan of him because the freak out videos on YouTube. Like, I'm a genuine
Nicolas
Cage fan. I think he's like an important actor of our generation.
Yeah.
I really, really do. No, this film's not very good.
Oh, no.
I feel like I'm the only one who really, really disliked it.
Oh, why? What happened?
I'm fine with violence in the films, but I thought it was over-the-top violent. I thought the inevitable bit where Nicolas Cage has his Nick Cage meltdown freak out felt so incredibly staged. Like, they just put a camera on, they were like, okay, do the YouTube thing, and he kind of went for it. And I think that's disrespectful because I think he's a better actor than that.
Yeah, and he's trying to relaunch his career a little bit, maybe, with his acting choices.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of filters on the camera as well that give it quite a trippy effect. There's a lot of like hallucinogenic drugs and things in the film. But I feel that it's disguising a total lack of plot.
Style over substance.
Yeah, a lack of any kind of meaningful direction. I can't tell you how much this film frustrated me, Abby.
Oh, what
a shame. It's really, really rare that I would be that cross about a film, but I wanted to leave. But I stuck it out, but not for me. I mean, again, the reviews have been incredible for this film, and I feel like I'm a lone person on my own in my real hatred of this film. Oh my gosh, I'm so angry. But you went to a community cinema screening the other night of Appropriate Behaviour, which is one of the funniest films, I think. It's so funny.
It is. And I forgot just how funny.
Yeah.
I saw it. I didn't catch it at the cinema the first time, and I realised it came out in 2014, which is 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Quite a long time ago. But it still feels really fresh, really relevant.
We've been talking about it this entire time.
Yeah, this is it. And but yeah, it feels like a real breath of fresh air when you're watching it.
Yeah.
And to watch it with an audience. So we went to visit Queer Cinema Collective in Manchester.
Brilliant.
It was our first ever screening. And it was such a privilege and a pleasure to be there for the first one. So they had fairy lights, they had like a fun raffle.
Oh.
They had this Silence of the Lambs book where she pretended to sign it for Jodie Foster, which I think is a great raffle prize.
Oh, wow.
But the film is great. It stood out. It is and all in all that comedy, I laughed way more. And I think, which we're going to talk about today probably, is just that joy of when you're laughing with everybody in the cinema.
Yeah.
And I think seeing in that space where it's playing to a queer audience and some of the jokes land in a different way, more specific way, as it's about a main character who's bisexual and she's just gone through a breakup. You've probably heard us mention it in this podcast about 49 times.
We really love this film, guys.
But yeah, I love the revisit. There's sort of like silly comedy. There's great verbal comedy. Just, yeah, really, really great to see it with other people.
Yeah, I've seen it in a cinematic setting twice. And I once saw it with a much, much older audience. And they didn't laugh very much. And they thought that it had been done before. And I was like, I feel this film's really fresh. And I was like, doubled over, especially the scene with the little boys making their little farty zombie film. But then we played it at a student conference a couple of years ago, so they were sort of like 18 to 21 year olds watching
it,
and they really connected with it, didn't they? And we asked them to leave little messages about how they felt about the film, and they were talking about how relatable it was and how they saw themselves in these characters. So it's quite interesting to me how it plays differently with different age groups.
Yeah, definitely, because it deals with some big subject matters about coming out, acceptance, things like that, but they're not the main focuses of the film, and it plays a bit more like real life, I think, throughout, and that's where a lot of the comedy comes from. So when the comedy comes from the tragedy, which I think there's that fine line between comedy and tragedy, and that's when you're in the sweet spot, I think.
And awkwardness.
Yes.
Which we know well.
Which we resonate well with. So let's have a look at what's coming out. It is Christmas time coming up soon, though. So
yeah, that's kind of dominating.
Yeah, dominating, which I'm fine with. Home Alone, love. It's a Wonderful Life, love.
Die Hard, love.
Love. Love them all.
Yeah.
But in terms of what's coming out, we've got Sorry to Bother You. We've talked quite a bit about that.
We have. I'm excited to finally see it, actually.
Me too.
I can't wait for this. I know it's had such a hard journey getting to British screens, and even a hard journey getting to American screens as well, actually. But it's a comedy. I think audiences are there for it. So I'm really excited to see it, really excited to see how it performs, because if it performs really well, it's going to be a lesson to those people that kind of dismissed it and pushed it to one side.
I do hope it gets to lead the way for more films like that coming through.
Go see it, people. Spend your money on it.
Yes. There's also a movie called Tides coming out, which looks really good, actually. It looks like a great... of a bit like, you know, we're talking about the Mike Leigh play for today. It gives me that vibe a little bit, because it's about two couples who have a little holiday on a barge boat, lovely canal boat, and you know, everything seems fine, but what's bubbling on the surface is about to come to what's bubbling is about to come to the surface.
Is it English language?
Yeah, it's set in Britain, and I think there's going to be a lot of sensibilities about how British people connect. But yeah, it looks fantastic. It's got really, really good reviews, and I think be interesting to see a film sort of set in that enclosed space and to see what that says about the characters and their backstories and things like that. So look out for that one.
Yeah.
Comes out on 7th of December.
So another film that's coming out in time for Christmas is Aquaman. So,
oh, thank goodness.
Yeah.
I've been waiting for this.
Just in time.
I honestly don't know what Aquaman is.
So Aquaman is one of the lesser superheroes, I guess, the kind of
Marvel?
Running out. Maybe. So
he travels
on
the
underwater.
Current.
I don't know why we find Aquaman so funny. So who's in it? It's the guy from Game of Thrones. He's Khal Drogo.
Oh,
Jason Momoa,
his
name.
He's great.
So yeah, he's Aquaman. So that's coming out. Also, Spider-Man in the Spider-Verse. I'm really running out of Spider-Man films at this point. Is that a good title for a Spider-Man film?
I really like Spider-Man films. And I've been
What's
very
the Spider-Verse?
Patient.
That's not for your average viewer. That's for like a fan of comics. Most people don't know what a verse is, a multiverse, a Spider-Verse. So it's just not a good name for a film for me.
It just sounds like you're a little bit drunk when you're saying it. Spider-Man and Spider-Verse.
Spider-Verse?
Yeah.
What's the Spider-Verse?
I mean, I probably will go see them both, though. I will admit this, yeah.
I can't keep track of who Spider-Man is anymore. I know that makes me sound like
100. Well, it's played by a lovely man called Tom Holland. He's very, very good.
Hang on. I do love him because of his lip sync to... Umbrella
Rihanna.
By Rihanna was maybe the best thing on the internet.
Yeah, he's all singing, all dancing. Yeah. Excellent.
He was in Billy Elliot, wasn't he?
Was he?
I think he was in Billy Elliot on the stage, not the movie.
Oh, I got you. I was like, really? Yeah. But I really like the Andrew Garfield Spider-Mans. I was into them.
Yeah, I like Emma Stone. Like, I'd watch that.
So it's a shame. But the new ones are good. It's not that they're not good. It's just I'm struggling to keep track. But I know I'll go and see
it. Spider-Man fatigue.
Yeah. Oh, the Spideyverse has really got me tired. So we're doing this episode on comedy because the BFI is staging the UK's greatest ever celebration of film and TV comedy this winter. From November and January, you get to see loads of great comedy films in cinemas.
Yeah, that's when you need it, right?
It's the perfect time in the winter months. And in this season, they're showcasing all kinds of excellent comedy. You've got your slapstick heroes, great writers, excellent performances, just so much variety and why this genre is one of my absolute favourites.
Yeah, it's your fave.
It is. So there's loads going on at the BFI South Bank. So they'll be screening some excellent activities. They're going to have special guests and stuff. But there's lots of regional venues that are also screening entire comedy seasons and strands as part of the season.
Yeah, there's Home in Manchester, Showroom Cinema here in Sheffield, Watershed in Bristol, Broadway in Nottingham, Derby Quad, and more taking part all over the country. And community cinemas are also taking part as well. We've seen in the run-up to this season loads of really great immersive comedy screenings. You've got some favourites, haven't you, Abby?
Yeah. I think one that really stands out for me is Girl Gang's Bridesmaids. So Girl Gang in Manchester, they did an immersive cinema screening of Bridesmaids, one of my favourite movies. And they had an improv comedy workshop. You could write your memories in a wedding book of any funny stories that you've had at a wedding. There was also a chocolate fountain like you see in the film.
Oh, that's so good.
And some live performances as well. Like actors were doing like medleys of the best quotes and stuff like that. Really, really good. Oh, what about you?
Well, I think Lee Film Society did a really amazing screening of Life of Brian. I'm laughing just thinking about it. Life of Brian is in a church, which is quite bold actually to show Life of Brian in a church. They had about 100 fake beards. Everybody was
placards and stuff.
The pictures alone have just had me in stitches. I think it's brilliant. So I just love it when groups do those extra elements that really make it such a fun night and make those kind of film screenings unmissable. You know, people will get off the sofa. They won't stay at home and watch a half hour comedy sitcom on TV. They'll come and share something with people.
Definitely.
Just so important when it comes to comedy. It really helps you connect with each other.
Oh, it just lifts the whole thing. Definitely.
Yeah. We Are Parable, who are an incredible London-based group.
Love them.
They've been doing some amazing immersive screenings down at the BFI South Bank. So they've been doing Coming to America, and they got John Landis.
I love that film.
I love Coming to America. So they had a Q&A with John Landis, and then they did a quiz afterwards. And then they screened one of my absolute favourite comedies from the 90s, House Party, you know, with Kid and Play.
Amazing.
Oh God, I just love that film so much. I could watch it on a loop. So they screened that and then they did a little house party with it.
Fantastic.
They're brilliant. So they're going to be touring those events around to Manchester and Liverpool a little bit later in the year, I think in January and February. So go to weareparable.com to learn a little bit more about those events because they're just such a great bunch of people doing such fun screenings.
Watch some of their videos of their past screenings. They did Black Panther. They had Ryan Coogler.
I remember looking through some of their pictures and being like, oh my God, that's Ryan Coogler.
That's Ryan Coogler.
That's so cool.
Directed Creed, one of my favourite films.
Just stop talking about
Creed.
You
never let me live down because of how much I love that. Okay.
So if you want to find out more about the BFI comedy season or find out what screenings are happening near you, you can go to the BFI comedy website, which is bfi-comedy.co.uk, and you can just pop in your postcode and find listings near you.
Great. Take part. It's going to be fun.
Yeah.
So going deeply into what the theme actually is of the season of comedy genius, who are some people that you regard as a comedy genius? Because that's quite a specific, noble thing to be.
It's such a big question. So the first name that comes to mind for me is Steve Martin, because I think a lot of people of our generation grew up on Steve Martin films, all those 80s and 90s films. And he was such an iconic stand-up for so many years. Mm. I've read loads of his books.
Things that stand out, like The Jerk.
The Jerk is such a special film. Yep. In fact, all those films that he made with Carl Reiner, The Jerk, All of Me with Lily Tomlin, who is a goddess in my opinion.
Oh yes.
That film
She's
is
a comedy genius.
Extremely underrated, extremely funny. I wish that people had seen that a little bit more. That's another one that I taped off the TV that I absolutely love. But The Jerk again, the female actor in that is Bernadette Peters, who's a huge Broadway star, and she's got such an adorable voice. She's just very, very funny. A little scene where they pull out a banjo is one of my favourite scenes in cinema ever.
Yeah, because he's musically gifted as well, isn't he?
He's a banjo guy.
Yeah.
Oh, is it a ukulele? It might be a banjo. I don't know.
It's a stringed instrument.
It's a small stringed instrument, people. How about you? Who are some of your comedy geniuses?
I think when it comes to... There's loads of comedy people I love, but geniuses for me that stand out are Tiffany Haddish. Mm-hmm. I think she is absolutely a comedy genius. Everywhere she goes, everything she does, it's not just her stand-up, it's not just when she's in films, it's when she's presenting the nominees for the Oscars.
God, I loved when she presented the nominees for the Oscars.
It was incredible. And just I just think she's got so much sparkle and wit, and she's just absolutely charismatic. Yeah.
And she can burst a very sort of... austere occasion and make it funny and own it.
Yes.
And you know, that could have been something that was extremely dull. We were sitting in our office watching those Oscar nominations. We were dying laughing.
It was one of the most exciting Oscar nominations.
She couldn't pronounce anybody's name. She couldn't... She kept forgetting the films. It was so funny, though. She just made it like her own space.
Which is definitely what comedy is. What a wonderful thing about comedy is, how you can do that and how it can be a bit of a superpower.
Yeah.
And she is so good in Girls Trip. She's absolutely just steals the show. She's not even the main character in it.
Yeah.
But for me, she's what I took away. And she can make an obvious joke really much more funnier than it might actually be on the page.
Yeah.
And I think that's what a comedy genius can be.
I think Maya Rudolph.
Oh, I love her.
She does that.
She makes every film better.
She is, in my mind, an absolute superstar. So from roles where she's kind of plays more of the straight character to the comedy characters, like in Bridesmaids.
Yeah.
She's not the all-out comedy character. To when she appears just in small parts on the small screen, like she's in The Good Place.
Mm-hmm.
And she's incredible in that. I was listening to a podcast the other day about her performance, and it was from another actor, and they said she puts mustard on everything that she does, which means that every single line has a pop.
Yeah.
And with most other actors, that would be terrible and very annoying, and you'd want them to shut up. But with her, it just works.
Her voice is amazing. The voice that she does in
Big Mouth.
In Big Mouth just makes her whole thing sound like bubble.
I want to take a bubble bath.
Definitely. I just love her. I also love Kristen Wiig. I think
you
she
do love
can do...
You are literally wearing an SNL t-shirt.
I just love her so much. I think she makes everything incredibly funny.
Yeah.
She'll dance with her fingertips and that will be hilarious. But she's also an extremely talented writer because she wrote Bridesmaids with Annie Mumolo, her old sketch partner from back in the improv days at Groundlings. And I also love Kate McKinnon, Tina Fey, Amy Poehler. A lot of them have broke out from SNL and doing all that sketch work, or they've come from an improv background.
Yeah, Groundlings or Second City.
That's it. Or UCB. But then they've gone on to just make excellent films that I don't know who else would be making them at that time. So Sisters was really good. That was written by Paul Appel.
No, I think I've watched that about three times. And the first time I watched it, I was like, it's not that great. I was expecting more. By the third time, I was like, I love this film.
Yeah.
I'll watch it on repeat.
Definitely. And I just think they're just great. And I like that they also make sure everybody in it is really, really funny. So it's not just their pals. They're actually in it because they're going to have a lot of fun and bring that to the screen.
Yeah, that's one that Sisters, you've got a bit of Kate McKinnon in there.
Yeah.
And I think it's before she kind of blew up and became super famous. But I still feel, even though she was the breakout star of Ghostbusters, that she's not getting the lead roles. And I really want to see her in something big soon.
Yeah, she got more of a role in The Spy Who Dumped Me. That was like definitely...
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah, and it showed her like range as well. And but I'm still waiting for one where she's leading it like Melissa McCarthy's leading films.
Yeah.
Because I think
Melissa McCarthy needs to be that level of fame.
Yeah, because I actually think she's just a good actor. And this is not to do down to being a comedy actor. It's just that to be a good comedy actor, you actually have to have range. You need to be able to downplay things and upplay things. And I think she definitely has it. And Melissa McCarthy, again, just adore her.
I know.
Spy. Even films that aren't maybe that great, her
Was
parts.
That The Boss?
The Boss, I
That's
love
rubbish.
The Boss. But she's so good.
It's rubbish, but she's great. She's
and
great in it.
Life of the Party, like it was a nice film, but there's this scene where she's just so nervous about public speaking, and me and my friends that we went with were crying with laughter at this like 5-minute scene because it's so relatable, but also farcical, and I think a lovely sweet spot there to have that in your acting.
Yeah.
Who else?
Oh, thinking a bit more old school, Mel Brooks is an absolute hero of mine, comedy or otherwise. I just absolutely adore him. Spaceballs.
Yeah.
It's just...
Spaceballs, Blazing Saddles. Yeah. I watched that with my brother.
Young Frankenstein,
excellent.
Yeah, I don't think my dad lets it be Christmas Day unless we watch Spaceballs on Christmas Eve. It's just a family tradition now. And I love a spoof. I really do enjoy a spoof to the extent that I kind of really like Scary Movie and all those films as well.
Another great spoof is What We Do in the Shadows. Really great spoof
it's brilliant.
Of like really horror and wolf kind of era we got into for a while.
Yeah.
But yeah, really good. And then when we think of writers and just general moguls of a genre in filmmaking, Nora Ephron.
Oh, do you know, it hurts my heart that she's no longer with us.
It does.
Really does, because she just... the spark that she put into everything. And I think that it's perhaps interesting here to talk about romantic comedies and how a lot of the other comedies we've talked about are like out and out belly laugh comedies.
Yeah.
But things like Sleepless in Seattle, When Harry Met Sally are hilarious films.
Sleepless in Seattle is hilarious. That little kid. That little girl. And then like your favourite line is, what am I going to say to her? Diane, take a look at these swatches. That film, I watched it on my own. I was quite a late comer to it. And I just watched it at home. And I clapped at the end completely involuntary. I just thought, that is a perfect film from start to finish in every way.
It is perfect. Even Tom Hanks's little curly mullet.
Yeah.
It's just lovely.
Another person that reminds me, you know, a bit before Nora Ephron's time is Elaine May. And she's someone I've just discovered kind of recently
as well.
Yeah,
you've been telling me about her.
She's amazing. So she wrote The Birdcage, which is one of your favourite
films.
Oh, I
love The Birdcage.
Yeah. And she also started with as like a sketch comedy duo on sort of late night TV segments, and she's just brilliant. Her wit, her performance, definitely if you get a chance to just look up some of her sketches and then do a deep dive, it's a wonderful journey.
Also
love Christopher Guest.
Oh, you do love Christopher Guest.
I do.
Yeah.
And again, I don't think his films are always belly laughs or perfect, but I love that he just chooses a theme that is just a delight to be in for a while with an ensemble film that actually works.
Yeah.
So he takes great... he usually uses sort of Jane Lynch.
Yes.
Who's a great... she's a comedy
genius.
Eugene Levy. Catherine O'Hara. Ooh. Catherine O'Hara.
Love her.
Loads of great... You'll notice everybody. You'll know them all. And Eugene Levy is a really good one to actually check out Christopher Guest movies for because he's not just the dad in American Pie.
No.
He's actually got this brilliant...
he's also the baddie in Splash.
Yeah. Yes, of course. But my favourite ones of Christopher Guest are A Mighty Wind, which is a sort of, they're all mockumentaries, which is a wonderful form to play with.
Yeah.
A Mighty Wind's about reuniting all these folk groups because someone from the folk scene has recently passed away.
Yeah.
And they all just play completely believable, fantastic characters. And you'll know it's Hank Azaria and people like that from The Simpsons. Are in it, so just definitely deeply recommend that.
Yeah, I love Best in Show.
Best in Show.
And Spinal Tap.
Like, Jennifer Coolidge.
Yeah, my gosh, and she is hilarious. Everything
so
that she's
good.
In, she's fantastic.
Yeah, check them out.
When we were talking to Michaela and Linnea in the next segment, one of the things that we didn't touch upon was foreign language comedies, actually. And I think those are really interesting because we... in preparation for this episode, we're trying to come up with a list of foreign language comedies that we'd seen, and it's quite short, actually. I don't think a huge amount are released in this country. There's the obvious ones, so Goodbye Lenin, which actually came out, I think, in 2003, which makes me feel very old because I used to watch it on repeat when I was a student. I really, really do love that film. There's just this whole segment with pickle jars that just, I love it to bits. And obviously, more recently, there was Tony Erdmann, which I think... It did spectacularly well, actually. A lot of people went to see it, but I think the length of it was a little off-putting. It's like 3 hours long, isn't it? But it's interesting to think about the translation of world humour, I guess. And when you have subtitles on a film and you're reading jokes, do you miss something?
It's possible, definitely, because delivery is everything, isn't it? And you're sort of having to... taking two different things at once, so reading the subtitle and then the joke that's in front of you. So that's why I think Tony Erdmann did well, because of the father-daughter relationship, the thematic thing within the film translates well to probably a lot of
The same thing with Goodbye Lenin. It's about it's a parental relationship.
Whereas The slapstick humour or physical comedy can translate really well. That's extremely universal. Yeah. Someone falling over and whatnot. But and also just think about how humour can have massive scope or really small scope. So something that might be funny to like my family in the Northeast might not be funny to somebody based in the South or in the Midlands. So I think that's quite interesting. One of my favourite foreign language comedy films is Tour de Fête.
Yep.
I actually saw that at community cinema a number of years ago in Selby.
Did you?
Yeah, and it was all films about cycling because it was the Tour de France happening.
Yeah, yeah.
But they screened some great films, but it was so funny. It was so funny watching this guy cycle around rural France and just get everything wrong and just be really clumsy. And it was just really nice to go back to those really elementary forms of comedy and seeing that with an audience. And I think that's the nice comedy that unites a lot of people, the same way Buster Keaton or Charlie Chaplin, that you could be 5 years old or 100 years old. There isn't you're all going to enjoy it. Same with Laurel and Hardy.
Yeah. I think with the foreign language comedies, they're perhaps just not getting picked up for UK distribution that much because when there is one, I think it does really, really well. There was a film from probably about 10 years ago called Bienvenue Le Chetty, which was Welcome to the Sticks, but also a little bit of a play on words. And that did really, really well. And I think people were quite keen on having stuff like that. It was quite a relatable one. It was about kind of like an urban guy who'd moved out to the countryside. Everybody was trying to book it, but I just don't think they're getting picked up very often. I think perhaps there's an assumption with the distributors that they don't play so well, or maybe it is hard to find that once in a blue moon one that really is a universal comedy that works regardless of it being something that you have to read rather than something you can intone.
Yeah.
Because I really, one of the things I love about comedy is wordplay. And that's quite hard to translate into a different language. It's hard to kind of, can you imagine being a translator and having to translate puns from a different language? It's a really difficult thing to do.
I can't imagine it because we translated all those French jokes from the sweets we got in the office once.
We did. Ellie brought some sweets back from the Basque Country and they all had French jokes on, and we spent a long time using Google Translate trying to figure out what they were.
We loved them.
And they were all wordplay, but they were terrible, but we loved them.
Yeah, we loved them. I think if you think about it, we don't get loads of comedies in the UK or very often anyway, to be honest. It's not a massive makeup.
Yeah.
I mean, rom-coms maybe, but not all in all that comedies.
Yeah, British ones so as well, actually. Those are few and far between.
Yeah, definitely. And we'll talk a bit about them with Michaela and Linney, which just highlights some really good ones. But maybe that's the case as well. That because I even myself look to foreign language cinema for maybe a drama or, you know, if anything, the closest I come to maybe a comedy is like a Pedro Almodovar film, but it's more like a melodrama. I'd like to increase my knowledge about foreign language comedies.
Yeah, me too.
I think this episode of the Cinema for All podcast is brought to you with the help of the extremely wonderful gang at the Showroom Cinema in Sheffield.
There are some great films coming out this month, and a trip to the cinema is a perfect way to unwind. With cheap tickets for under 26-year-olds, comfy seats and an outstanding programme of new international releases and classics to rediscover, you'll always find yourself welcome.
So get yourselves to the Showroom Cinema or any of the great independent cinemas across the country. Find out more and book tickets at showroomworkstation.org.uk.
So, full disclosure, we obviously love the Showroom Cinema. We used to work there,
both of
us, at different times.
Yes.
And we also love Michaela and Linnea, who they volunteered with us at Cinema for All. And they're big community cinema fans, aren't they?
They are. They're both big fans. And it's been so good to get to know them and see their journey working in cinemas and just the impact they've brought with their knowledge and their personalities. And it's really nice to see that.
Definitely. I think that a cinema programmer is perhaps not a job that a lot of people know exist. If you say programmer, they think you mean a computer programmer or a coder or something like that. Whereas we specifically mean the people who select the films to put on in an independent cinema or a community cinema. And for me, Michaela and Linnea represent kind of a new generation of people coming up and programming cinemas that are really wanting to be very connected with the audience. They go down into the cinema, they really interact with the audience, they talk to the audience, that they really want to show something that people can engage with and create that kind of social atmosphere in a cinema, because independent cinemas can be quite an intimidating place to go into.
Yeah.
I remember when I first went to the Showroom Cinema in 2003, something like that, when I was a student. I'd never been anywhere like that before. And the person I was with went up to the counter and ordered a latte. And I was like, you can get hot drinks here.
Yeah, like, it's a different experience.
It felt not allowed. It felt like we were doing something bad.
Bad to the bone.
Yeah. So I'm excited to see younger people, to see women programming films in cinemas across the country, and I just love what they're doing.
Yeah, me too. So let's get into it.
Yeah, let's get into it.
Hi, Linnea and Michaela. Thank you so much for joining us. We're super excited to have you on the podcast. You're two young female programmers, and you've been given the reins on this comedy season at the Showroom. Can you tell us what that's been like?
So the comedy season, we really wanted to get our teeth stuck into it because, as you say, we're young, fresh female ladies. And the seasons we've been able to get stuck into in the past have been quite heavy. We've mm-hmm. done Bergman. Varda was nice, but...
Varda's light, but still...
she's still heavy.
A lot to get into if you're not super film literate or you're not, like, really engaged with foreign language cinema. So it was nice to be able to just be like, what do we really enjoy watching? And what's, like, easy... Not easy, but kind of gateway.
And to mix cinema. It up a bit, because that's it. When you're doing a specific director season, you can throw in those other titles if you want to, but we didn't necessarily have the scope to on those occasions. So this is an opportunity to just go for it and choose whatever films we wanted to watch on the big screen that we loved ourselves.
Also, what's nice about it is it's got loads of variety. So it was great to program something that would have something for everyone, because we've got silent film, we've got stoner comedy, and kind of everything in between, which a lot of seasons that we get, even I guess thrillers last year, it was the first program I worked on here, was the home touring season, which was amazing, but European political thrillers of the 1970s is fairly niche.
It was dark.
It's fairly niche. So it's nice to work on something that's quite broad.
Yeah,
and to have fun.
Definitely.
Again, when we did Bergman Varda, we still had fun, but this was an excuse to be silly fun, which is always nice.
That's a really good point, because a lot of people might think that comedy doesn't have really a place in an independent cinema. It's a bit more of a multiplex fare. What do you think about that?
No. we still have comedies, but we tend to have the European comedies over British comedies, Hollywood comedies. We'll still do the British independent stuff. But I think it's a really good, like you were saying earlier, a gateway into your venue, because people have an idea of an independent cinema, and it can be that kind of cine literate, highbrow cinema. And this is a good chance, a good opportunity to get people in to see stuff that they recognise and that they're familiar with, and then hopefully slide them into something that's maybe not what their first choice would have been, but would appeal to them anyway, just to get them comfortable with the venue. Because, multiplexes are great, but, we want to be able to provide that experience here too, in terms of the films and the stuff that they can come and watch here, and let them know they can be comfortable and know what they're getting.
Definitely.
That's not too
wobbly. That makes sense. What are some of your favourite comedy films?
That was the cutest laugh I've ever
heard. What made you laugh that way? That's great.
Because I'm going to say Tony Erdman.
Yeah, of course you're going to say Tony Erdman. Because you only laugh in the face of tragedy.
That's fine. That comedy's a thing.
Three-hour German tragedy. Very Swedish. Gosh, there's loads. I mean, there's things talking about Swedish stuff. There's a film called Cops that's a Swedish comedy that was then turned into Reno 911, which is what that's based on.
I had no idea.
What a hilarious thing to say.
So the Reno 911 stuff, love it. Things like Airplane, Sister Act.
Oh, Sister Act.
Yes.
Oh,
love Sister Act.
I'm trying to remember, because I just feel like whenever anyone's like, what's your favourite this film? I'm like, never seen a film. I don't even remember a film title. What are films that are good? I don't know. I like dark comedy. Mm-hmm. That's my bag. I like comedy that's also deeply stressful.
What is it about that attracts you to that?
Stressful comedy.
Stressful comedy. Stressful is a real word. But I like the mix of genres, I think, and the mix of there being kind of like a thrilly, darker element, but then also a bit of comic relief to get you through the rest. If I'm just watching the really dark stuff all the time, then it's too much.
I think that's quite true. The British stuff that you've programmed for this season, like Four Lions, super dark. Sightseers.
Very
dark.
Sightseers is on there.
Yeah.
There. Well, yeah, just looking at what you have programmed. You guys have chosen this together. Mm-hmm. So you've separated it in your different categories. So stoner comedy, women in comedy, slapstick comedy. So you've got things like Friday, which I love. I didn't expect to see that on the cinema screen anytime soon. Yeah. Me and my brother used to watch that all the time.
And it was on 35 mil.
Yeah.
You've got it on 35 mil. Still keep that independent.
There was no, like... DCPs or anything of it. They were like, we've just got this print, so we had Friday on 35 mil.
That is a beautiful jewel. Was it okay? Was it bashed up?
Yeah, it was good. Solid.
Dazed and Confused, Harold and Kumar, Get the Munchies, Attack the Block. Attack the Block's more of a modern film, but what would you say about, obviously, Dazed and Confused, Friday, they're sort of quite old now, but still cult classics. Yeah. What was it like to revisit them when you were coming up with the programme?
Well, I'd watched Friday a few months ago, so I thought it'd be really good if we could get this in the cinema. And it's those cult films that still, that they have, you see little drops of them from like Bye Felicia and all that on social media. Mm-hmm. They're recognisable things that people might not know where they come from.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it. If you can drop those into your programme, be like, come and discover this. This is the film that bore that. Yeah,
it's that mix of like... trying to engage new audiences with those little tidbits, and then also beautiful nostalgia for people who are my age. Like, I guess it's still young audiences, because young audiences are like 30 now.
Yeah.
But that, I don't know, just like remembering your kind of coming of age, and that's what like Dazed and Confused and Friday, I think, can do. Mm-hmm. It's nice to relive that in the cinema.
Definitely.
I think what's nice about it is that they're older films, but they're older films that are perhaps for our generation. I think a lot of people want to show older comedies. They'll show like Some Like It Hot, those sorts of films, which are incredible. Mm-hmm. And I think that what's really interesting about what you've packaged up is that they're a little bit more recent, but they've still got so much nostalgic value for people.
And they can be read. That's it, they're films, not to get too academic, but they're films that can get read. Things like Dazed and Confused, I watched that for the first time as part of my university degree, where we watched films and talked about them for 3 years.
Yeah.
And Dazed and Confused was a really important one on there. Yeah. Slice of life.
I watched Dazed and Confused at university, but differently.
I feel like with Friday, Dazed and Confused, Harold and Kumar, these are the ones that you sort of get together with your friends or your siblings, and it's that sort of joint shared experience, because comedy is so infectious. I find comedy is more funny when you're watching them with other people. You sort of the train of laughter sort of keeps circling round, but it's funny how they've never really been in the cinema that much, so that's really, really cool that you've done that.
And sometimes people might call them more like guilty pleasures.
Never have a guilty pleasure.
Never have a guilty pleasure.
Feel guilty.
No, like Pineapple Express, you screened as part of the stoner season.
Yeah, yeah.
That's like one of my favourite films to watch on a long time. It's just so funny. It's excellent. And to be able to come and see it in my local independent cinema is kind of liberating, really. It's like, this space is for all sorts of films. It's not just for highbrow films.
We started the season with Pineapple Express because we realised it's the 10th
anniversary.
Wow.
It's 10 whole years.
I had grand ideas of that because I wanted to get Seth Rogen here.
And he said no.
He didn't even give me the time of day.
Lincoln's trying to DM Seth Rogen on Instagram, which is wildly inappropriate and not what we do at work.
So he's probably like in Canada.
He's busy
doing stuff.
We should try Danny McBride. He's busy. I feel like he'd be chill.
Be for it.
Just did Halloween.
It's a trick there.
When we look at the season and the variety that you've got, you can see that representation's obviously been really important when you've been programming it. What was it like for that process, and do you find comedy to be an inclusive genre?
In some cases it was, in some cases it wasn't. When we were doing stoner comedy, it was really hard because we were like, there's no women here. And we really wanted to kind of have it not launch the season with like man And I think you suggested Smiley Face,
yes.
Which is a stoner comedy with, is it Anna Faris?
Anna Faris, mm-hmm. yeah.
Anna Faris, but we couldn't get the rights for that. No. So that was really disappointing. But we tried to make sure that it was evident throughout, because it's not that I think comedy is not always inclusive, but I think some of the titles that people naturally go for are not always the ones that are really, really inclusive.
I think when we came to deciding on what strands we were going to do, we kind of started off from a point, we wanted women in comedy as one. We specifically wanted women in comedy as one. But then we wanted POC comedy as well, and we kind of ended up moving away from that, instead having it throughout the strands instead. So we did still try to make sure that there was a strong female film in there, but that's the problem with the stoner comedy. It's just
very male dominated.
Which is why that has its own strand.
Then I think instead of doing obviously POC comedy, as we said, because it's not one thing. We've made sure that there's kind of people of colour represented throughout. So obviously we had Friday, then we've got Four Lions, we've got Girls Trip, Gone Too Far as well. And the director of Gone Too Far, Destiny, is coming for a Q&A, which is really exciting. I think that was, correct my facts if they're wrong, but I think she's a BAFTA breakthrough Brit, but it was also the fourth British film directed by a black woman distributed in cinemas. Yes.
Wow.
Only the fourth. It was like 2014. Yeah. That's crazy to me. But we've invited her up, so that's really exciting.
That's great. I mean, it seems like the British ones do a bit better, maybe with the gender balance just naturally, like Adult Life Skills, written, directed and starring a woman, so triple F rated. Sightseers was co-written with Alice Lowe, and she stars in it, offering some really great different perspective in comedy, so that's really good. What's been the response like so far from the audience? I know that you're not fully into the season just yet.
So we started with the Stoner and Cult comedy. In terms of numbers, not amazing, but it's more the visibility of us doing it, because having those strands allowed us to play around with marketing a lot, and we got really good responses online, on social media, when people found out the kind of films we were showing. So in terms of the numbers, like bums on seats, so far not the busiest thing we've ever done. But in terms of engagement online, it's been so great. Just people kind of saying about Friday.
And we had a really nice review. Pineapple Express, the first film that we did, the people that do Jump Cut wrote a review of the film, but they start their review with just kind of like a write-up about us. It was really lovely to read. I don't have it, so I can't quote it, but they're just saying that it's nice to have an independent venue that supports that kind of work and is a fun place to come and watch things with your friends. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, that's what we do. You got it, guys. It was exciting.
That's it. And people are still excited about the stuff that's coming up, because we've only just finished the first strand of stoner comedy, going into the contemporary British stuff now. And yeah, people are really giving us lots of good feedback online. So yeah, it's really promising.
That's fantastic.
Really good to see.
Have you sort of popped your head in for a few screens to hear the laughs?
Final Express, I came in, and yes, loved it. People very chilled out in the cinema.
Interesting.
Very chilled out.
Wonder why.
Not expected at all from that strand.
Yeah, it was really cool to just hear people just squawking with laughter. That's something I don't get a lot, not since, I know I'm going about Tony Erdman, but not since I've watched that, or Death of Stalin, actually. I've heard people laugh
really
like
going
that.
For it.
Yeah.
It's nice as well, because to be able to laugh out loud, like, I don't hear people laughing out loud a lot in cinemas, apart from at, like, exhibitor events, where those people are really, really comfortable in the cinema. And I think it's really valuable to have people feel comfortable enough to, like, really let it out, like, let out a belly laugh. And that's what we wanted to do. And that's what they were doing.
Perfect match. That's great. So Sidewalk Stories was previously unavailable for a while, wasn't it, in terms of getting it onto a screen in the cinema. Was it quite exciting to be able to finally get a film like that onto the screen and
absolutely.
As part of this.
Because that wasn't something that we had to go for. It was kind of presented to us as part of the mm-hmm. ICO package. Mm-hmm. So there, when they announced their programme, we've been waiting a while to see what they yeah. were going to do. Mm-hmm. To see things like that alongside Tati and Almodovar was fab. And already people are snapping up tickets to see it, so
great.
No, yeah. It was fantastic.
We kind of like pieced together what our overarching strands were going to be and sort of thought about titles. So it was really interesting because the package that they've distributed is really, really broad and varied. Mm. There's a lot of different things in there, so it was great to be able to just like hand pick things that fit into what we were already programming that were also going to be really hard to get hold of if it wasn't for them.
That's it, because we'd a lot of them correlated with what we wanted to do as well, so obviously we wanted some Keaton, but things like 9 to 5
like a food
when that came up, absolutely lost yeah. my head yeah. thinking yes.
I'm really excited about the Women in Comedy strand mm-hmm. actually, because I think it's one of the most varied mm-hmm. in terms of like the different films. So we've got Girls Trip in there, which is kind of like tempting in people who maybe they haven't been here before. Come watch mm-hmm. Queen Latifah.
And then come and watch some Pedro Almodovar.
Yeah, if you went to it, it goes to like 9 to 5 and then it's Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown. And so it's, I think there's a lot to explore in that season.
Mm-hmm. I love the idea that you're using comedy to welcome people to the venue and make them understand that this is kind of a safe space kind of cinema and that it's welcoming.
Yeah, we like to have fun here. Yeah, it might not sometimes. Seem like it, but we do.
It's definitely fun. You two are very fun. I feel like there are some parallels between Girls Trip and Almodovar, sort of gross out comedy in between there. That's a nice little link you've got going on. I was going to ask you, comedy is often shunned by award seasons and I wondered why you thought that is. The only kind of things we can track really are Melissa McCarthy got nominated for her performance in Bridesmaids and the script for Bridesmaids also got nominated, but that's kind of recent history. Mm-hmm. Why do you think they're not really included?
I feel like, I guess the Academy and the awards bodies really value kind of serious things mm-hmm. with a message, but I think comedy can do that, and I think people don't realise, well, I think people do realise, but it's really hard to do comedy yeah. well. It's so easy to make really bad comedy, and when it's great, it's so great, and it brings people together in a way that other films don't.
I think there's a lot to do with subjectivity with comedy as well. I think it opens itself up yeah. to more criticism when you've got quite a serious, hard-hitting drama yeah. or something like Utoya, something...
Yeah, everyone will universally cry.
Yeah, they're not, yeah. Mm. And then they're not going to pick it apart as much as they will do necessarily a comedy, where they might think, well, what's the point in this film existing if they don't get the humour, they don't get why people would want to come and watch it or see why it might be worthy of acclaim. Because, yeah, it does tend to be... When it comes... TV is a bit more... open.
Yeah.
So with things like Fleabag, series mm-hmm. like that that really balance the darkness with the comedy really well, but I'd still call that a comedy. Mm-hmm. There's more openness with TV than film. I think there hasn't been a Fleabag yet for TV, for film, sorry. I know that Daphne was kind of
touted
at it, but I think comedy opens itself up to more criticism because not everyone will have the same
experience,
taste, so I think that might be
okay. Well, thank you so much.
Sorry.
It's been a right laugh.
Can we keep going?
I just want to talk to you forever.
Let's just keep going.
No, I think you're right about that. Comedy can often seem really like frivolous and far away, but you've mentioned Tony Erdman. Mm. That's talking about a really difficult father and daughter relationship, but through comedy. Girls Trip is about friendship and trying to find truth together, as well as all the silly stuff that they do.
Ladybird earlier this year.
Ladybird, yes.
Like, it's hilarious, but also hilarious. My soul.
Yeah. Our soul is still not repaired.
The end of that, we were just like, oh, let's just not speak for maybe 25 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. But then that's it. Some Keaton and Chaplin, some of the most fantastic, like cinematic feats. Mm-hmm. When you're watching, I watched a bit of Steamboat Bill Jr. yesterday, and when Keaton's like flying through the sky on this tree that's been uprooted in the wind. Some of the most amazing like technical stunts put together that he did himself, and I think that's something that's for comedy, delivered for laughs, but is really well worked out and thought out and planned and achieved and executed so brilliantly that only that kind of film would do.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much. It's been amazing to chat to you and hear about your insights of the brilliant films you've programmed. So we'll be encouraging everybody to go, and I'll definitely be attending some of them.
Thank you for having us. We love you.
We love you
so much. No doubt.
We'll come back.
Yes, we'll definitely have you back. Thank you. We are very lucky to have a pair of girls like that next door to us.
I know.
The girls next door. So good. Yeah, really great to chat to them. Mm. I loved the films they picked, and I've not seen some of those films in some of the other programmes, which is so good that there's so much variety going on across the country for this.
Yeah, I think they've made such an effort to make it a really interesting full programme. And when they talked about ensuring that there's diversity across the programme, it's all the way across. It's not just one strand.
Yeah.
And I think that's really special. Also, we love Linnea because she has an excellent dog who sometimes comes into our office.
Yeah.
Poppy.
Cheers us up.
This episode is dedicated to Poppy.
We love you. So if you like the Cinema for All podcast, please rate and review us on iTunes. Share it on social media. Tell your pals about it. It goes such a long way.
Such a long way. Please do it.
But for now, it's time to roll credits. Producer,
Jay Platt.
Logo designed by
Lydia Lipinski at Thoughts Make Things.
Hosted by
Jack Chell
and Abby Standish. Thanks to
Linnea Pettersson, Michaela Smith, Annabelle Grundy, Deborah Parker and Sheffield Live.
The Cinema for All podcast is supported by the BFI awarding funds from the National Lottery.
Thank you!